Hi, everybody. If you have any trouble hearing me or something, let me know. I'm like attached to my cell phone at a hotel in Chicago. But it's good. I get to do the big cool life things today. Although it was a road trip with three children and a mother-in-law. Oh, four children and a mother-in-law. the fourth child would be my partner, David. Yeah. And we've already discussed he can do a lot more damage than the other three kids. And they're going to have a lot to do with kind of where my story is at today, quite frankly, because I didn't have any of that when I got clean. I know that there's a lot of people on here that I know really well and that know my story. And I will say that, you know, I definitely qualify to be here. I grew up in a home where there was a lot of drugs and alcohol. And that was just kind of what I thought you did when you got older, was that you basically just, you know, got a job and then went to happy hour and drank until you passed out. Whether that was at the bar or whether that was once you got home remained to be seen. But that was just kind of how I grew up. And it's totally cool because, you know, that's just my story. But what I will say is that I was born in Fort Rucker, Alabama. And so my dad was in the military, and my mom was actually also, she was a civil servant. She worked at the Army base as well. And that's kind of its own little weird family, the military is. I also sometimes think that it is also its own, like, diagnosis of some kind, because it's also, there is a lot of teaching. For me, I was taught to be very self-sufficient. I was taught to, you know, never let anyone basically take care of me. One of my favorite, fondest stories that's completely true is back in the day, this is the early 80s, in Austin, you know, it was a totally different city. And my dad would drop me off. He did this probably 10 to 15 times. I was seven, and he would drop me off at different parts of Austin, and he'd give me money, and he would expect me to find my way home on the bus system. I don't think that happens to most children. But it happened to me, and I did always find my way home. Again, this was without cell phones. This was my dad kind of teaching me how to take care of myself, I guess. That was the thought behind it. The reason why I bring that up is because it made my first step extremely hard, that whole surrender, right? Because when you think of, you know, I've heard speakers say this, when you think of surrender in a military context, there's no negotiation, right? You just literally have to put it down, put your hands up, and basically do what is told of you. And I will tell you, I'm so thankful today that I was able to have that first step experience, but it did take many, many years. I was 39 years old when I came to Family House. I got out just a few days shy of my 40th birthday. And I, my first step was absolutely the most difficult step for me to take. That admission of powerlessness, even when I was living in my car, you know, I would typically hang around folks that didn't even have a car to live in. And because of that, I could basically rationalize that I wasn't really powerless because I had a car to live in, and its inspection was up to date, and I had, you know, liability insurance, and oh my gosh, this is true. Or I would consistently associate with people who were doing just a little worse off than I was. And then I would kind of use them, you know, the optics of why I was actually okay, right? I was actually okay because at least I'm not like them, which in hindsight is horrible. and so that also brings me to the next kind of, thing that I want to bring up. And that is that I did not know what friends were, you know, in my addiction and in, you know, the before times, as I like to call them. I did not know how to have healthy relationships. I was all about what you could enhance my life with. And, you know, I thought that the only reason I was ever invited to a party was because of what I could bring to it. And it took me a really long time when I first got into the rooms of Cocaine Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous to truly accept offers of help. And if there is one thing that I could tell 6 year ago me, it would be, and hopefully those on here that are kind of new in recovery, is to accept that help and to trust folks that are in the program. You know, my home group, is a little place in South Austin, and, there are some old timers there who literally would ask me if they could give me a ride home in the beginning because they saw me waiting for the bus, and, I refused rides home. I wanted to know why they wanted to know where I wanted to live. You know, they would ask me out for coffee or, you know, ask me to come to coffee with a group. I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know how to do those things. I didn't know how to friend. I also was very conscientious, quite frankly, of eating in front of people. Like that might sound silly to some of you, but my food issues are definitely a part of my story. And for those of you who have never seen me, I am 6 feet two. I'm 6 foot two, and I am a big girl, you know. And so a lot of my meth usage throughout my life, had to do with, body image issues. And, I often refer to, you know, smoking meth and losing 30 pounds in 30 seconds. And it's true, you know, that's why I thought I needed to smoke meth was so I could lose weight. And that's just my story. It never stayed off because unfortunately I also like malt liquor. but I used to tell people, you know, that I was a really bad alcoholic until I started doing meth again, you know, and so rarely was I doing both of those for longer than, you know, a day or two at a time. I would switch off one for the other. I have, well, usually this is when I talk about my kids. That's such a different thing right now, I will tell you. But I currently have 4 kids, a 20-year-old Jasmine, a 12-year-old named Elias, and a new 10-year-old named Nemo, and a 2-year-old named Amy that are in my life and in my custody and under my care. And that has been a beautifully scary thing. You know, being in charge of 2 new kiddos, you know, has, had it not been for recovery and had it not been for the life that I've been able to build for myself due to, you know, my friendships here on the screen and Austin Recovery, and, you know, at the direction of a wonderful sponsor and lots of people who know a lot more about this than I do. I don't think that I would have been prepared to take on two new children into my household. And so I will always be grateful for that. I will tell you, it's interesting being so in love with kids that I did not give birth to. And I will tell you, I told my 20-year-old Jasmine not too long ago, I said, you know, no offense, but actually not having to give birth to them makes me love them more. There's something to be said for not having this horrible, like, you know, medical memory of things that happened when I gave birth to children, but that's a little bit about my story as well. So what I was like is I was a very, I'm going to say some things that might, I hope it doesn't offend anyone, but I'm just trying to kind of get stuff out there. I'm not trying to, romanticize my mothering at all, but I will tell you that I was not a present mother. In the before times, whether I was drinking or drugging, or, you know, following after a man, because that was my other addiction, I was not very present as a parent. And what I mean by that is, I I didn't really connect with my kids. I don't know how else to say that. I wasn't exactly sure how to even. And what has been so wonderful about recovery is that that is such a non-issue now. Thinking about it today and saying it out loud actually feels, it's difficult, but I also recognize that person, right? That me 7+ years ago, I hardly recognize that person. And I am thankful for that, but it is my truth. And, you know, I often used to tell people I was never the kind of person that wanted to like watch your kid. I didn't want to hold your kid. I didn't want to babysit your kid. You know, I wasn't a kid person, you know, and, but then you get married and you get pregnant and what do? You know, you have kids. And, motherhood was not at the top of my list of priorities. It just wasn't. And those are in the before times. Again, I want to stress that that is not my life today. Today, my life is completely different. 180 degree turn from that. And it's the promise, intuitively knowing how to handle situations that used to baffle me. That's my favorite promise. And that's what I believe I've been given, you know, because of learning how to work this program. So I was a meth addict from the time I was 16, until I was 39. I did not use meth every day, but I will say that, I would use meth for long stretches until shit got weird. Right. And then I needed to like clean myself up or get myself together, or, you know, follow through with some job change or, you know, residence change. Like I would clean myself up only to the extent that I had to. I wasn't ever getting well because I needed to. Because I wanted to, but because I needed to, for various reasons. Sometimes it would be because I'd lost too much weight and, you know, I didn't look healthy. Sometimes it would be, because I needed to get a new job. That's just my truth. But I will say that, I smoked meth for a couple of decades. And then the last 5 years of my addiction, I started to shoot up meth. And, that was kind of when all bets were off. I was on my second husband, my second child, and I'm still on my second husband for what it's worth. But, things were not good at home. You know, things were not good at home. I thought I could use meth like a lady. I don't know. And also drink. And that is not, that's not really a way to live life with kids. And I had in December of 2012, my partner David was incarcerated, and that was definitely God doing for me what I could not do for myself, for sure. But it was also a huge shock. And at that time, when David was incarcerated, my kids had already been with my mom for a couple of months. I don't exactly know when, and I still don't, you know, and that's kind of something that I've talked about before on my list of consequences, is I don't even really remember when I sent my kids to live with my mom, but I did. And so my kids were under the impression once my partner was incarcerated that I was going to come get them, because, you know, if you were a kid, that's what you would think, right? Like, oh, okay, mom's, you know, dad's away now. And now mom's going to come get us. And I did not. And I did not know that that was their expectation until I was probably about 3 years clean. And my daughter was able to open up to me and explain to me how difficult it was for her that I chose, you know, that it wasn't necessarily just because of my partner, that I was not active in their life, that I really continued to choose meth over my kids. And when I was doing my fifth step, I remember telling my sponsor that my mom had taken my kids away. I don't know how many other people have ever framed what happened in their life in that manner. But my sponsor was very quick to explain to me that those were not the words to use. And then in fact, I had chosen meth and men over my children. And I'm going to be real honest with you. I was very offended when she told me to use those words. However, it wasn't until I was able to say that out loud that I was actually able to begin healing from that fact, because she was right. And until I was able to actually name some of the pain that I caused, I wasn't able to forgive myself for it. And that's just my story. And I just want to lift up something that I have had to do in my recovery that has really changed the trajectory of my life. And that is really owning up to my part in situations. Because until I got clean, I was never wrong, never wrong. Like, so sorry, you're so wrong, but I'm so right all the time. There were never apologies because that meant weakness. I was a completely different person. And I think back now, and I think how prickly really I must have been, because I was unable to ever admit my part in things. And honestly, I didn't see my part in things. I mean, I want to be honest, like if I'd seen it, I would have, no, that's not true. I probably wouldn't have, but I didn't see my part. And that's the most important part. I was always the victim. It was, everything was always being done to me. Why is God doing this to me? Why, you know, it was a very big pity party. And I'm so thankful that once I started being able to say the words about my actions, the real words, like I gave my kids to my mom, because I thought doing meth was more important. And it wasn't until then that I was able to truly start healing from that fact. So that having been said, on February 12th, 2015, my house was raided in Houston, Texas. I had been, it had been about 2.5 years since my husband had been incarcerated, and I had started, you know, my own, you know, downward spiral all on my own. And my kids had been living with my mom, and I did all the things like saying I was going to meet them places and then not showing up, or telling them that I was going to come see them for Christmas and then not understanding why people were angry because I got there at, you know, 1 a.m, like, you know, all that really like horrible, like, what do you mean? You know, it's freaking December 26th. You know, and I was not great at all during that time. But what this is what I know today. What I know today is that that's not who I am, right? I'm so thankful to know that today, that that's not who I am. It definitely is who I was, but now that I have removed the obsession of drugs and alcohol, and I'm so thankful that I am able to actually be a completely different person today. And mostly that shows up in my relationship with my children. I'm just going to be real honest with you. That is what my recovery has taught me. I oftentimes will say that my daughter, when I was first reuniting with my daughter, she called me Kyle, you know, she did not call me mom. And that was a really good way of being told, in a manner of speaking, exactly what I had to do, the work I had in front of me with my 15-year-old, because she wasn't calling me mom. And I had to earn that. That was a very difficult thing to swallow. But what I can tell you is I'm very thankful that that is how it worked out, because I was able to completely immerse myself in those living amends with her primarily in the beginning. But one time we were sitting at my sober home. I lived in an Oxford house for several months after I got clean. And, we were sitting there and I said, man, aren't you so glad to have your mom back? Right. She was like, yeah. So no, about that. Nope. You're not my mom. She's like, and it's very nice to meet you. Like, seriously, that's what my 15-year-old told me. Like, it's so good to meet this person. I've never met you before. And I want to tell you that I'm so thankful that I'm not who I was. And I'm also very thankful that my kids are so forgiving. Were so forgiving of me in the very beginning. You know, So my house got raided in 2015. I checked myself into Harris County Psychiatric Center. That was how my journey into recovery began. And I went to Volunteers of America in Houston, and that was a 90-day program while I was waiting to get a bed at Austin Recovery, because I didn't go to prison, see, whenever my house was raided, because my house was raided by the postal police. And it still blows me away that that's a thing. So my house was raided by the postal police, and it had to do with some guys that were living there who were sealing mail out of mailboxes. And that's a very tweaker thing to do. So I don't need to really go into that further, because everybody knows what happens there. So anyhow, that's what happened. And I really wasn't a part of that. I didn't know anything about it. But so because of that, none of the drugs they found were able to stick to me. But what happened was I had people from different agencies come and basically tell me they knew where my kids were. They knew where my first and second husbands were. And they basically said, this will never happen again. We now know what you've got going on. And, you know, I was in Harris County at the time, and they're like, and we strongly urge you to reunite with your children in Travis County, because we know what's up now, you know? And so I would love to sit here and say that, like, my kids got me clean, or, you know, the thought of, you know, being a good mom got me clean, but it didn't. I didn't want to go to jail. You know, I didn't want to go to jail. And guess what? That's okay. That's what my sponsor tells me. And I'm so thankful to know that, you know, what got me clean is not what keeps me clean. I didn't know any better then. But for whatever reason, you know, I see my higher power's hands all over that today. And I'm so thankful for that, because it started my journey into this new way of life. So I went to HCPC, came to Austin a couple weeks later, and was really beaten into submission, for lack of a better term. When I did my intake with Miss Carolyn, I remember being very suicidal, and there was just something that told me at that time that I needed to be very open with Carolyn about how I was feeling. And I'm really thankful that I did. It's the first time that I had ever been honest with a mental health professional. I don't know about you guys, but I'm like, how are you? Fine. Well, you know, how are things going? Fine. You know, that doesn't work with a psychiatrist, you know. Well, it didn't work for me. And so, I just was always fine. And, but I wasn't fine. You know, and so I came to Austin. I was able to really lay it down for Carolyn, and I really got to work on these steps. And I'm so thankful today for Austin Recovery, because basically that place is just sacred ground as far as I'm concerned. I was able to learn how to become a human being there, you know? And one of the things that I think is interesting, I've heard other people share this before, is that whenever you're on the grounds at the ranch, right? It was the first time I had noticed nature in a really long time, like clouds and trees and leaves and butterflies. And, I just realized how much I had been missing. And if I could actually be so thankful of nature, what about those kids, you know, that were wondering where the hell I was for so many years? And so I'm so thankful. I have so many fond memories of that place, and, you know, hope to get back there soon. And, I really do hope to get back there soon. So I got out of treatment. I got into an Oxford house. My mom and my children came to pick me up from treatment. And basically what I was told was my job was to stay clean. you know, and my mom gave me 90 days. I got a scholarship to get into a sober home. I went to a Women and Children's House, even though I didn't have my kids, because that was forward thinking. Well, God, if I wanted to stay with me, then I should probably, you know, go be in a sober home that supports, you know, that has other kids whose parents are new in recovery. And that was a very good decision that I made, probably one of the first. I look back now and I'm like, wow, you really were thinking about that. And because until that point, I really hadn't been thinking about that. And I have, I immediately started working with a sponsor. It was not easy for me to find a sponsor, but one of the counselors who's no longer there, she actually is the one that I had been doing dope with her niece in Houston. And she told me that there was a lady who ran around the Austin Recovery Circle, who she had done dope with back in the day, and that she really thought that we would hit it off. And so Debbie Szilagyi, your princess, is my sponsor still to this day. And she knows how to call me on my stuff. And she also answers that phone anytime I call. And I have to tell you, in the very beginning, one of the things I was learning was how to have a relationship with a woman whom I admired and who had what I wanted, which at the time was like, you know, an apartment, you know, earrings, you know, socks that matched, you know, I was, but again, those were the things that I had really been lacking, for years. So that's what happened. What is it like today? I have to tell you, you know, life is good today. It is difficult. I struggle with mental health issues. I want to be very upfront about that. I struggle with a lot of mental health issues. And so I'm like trying some new medicine right now, which is kind of a difficult thing, but I talk about it openly because I want everyone here to know that it is okay. You know, it is okay to seek outside help whenever, you know, just not being on drugs and alcohol doesn't cut it. And the good news is that what I've learned in recovery is how to speak openly and honestly with my healthcare providers and how not to play doctor. I know that that's a shock, but did you know that there are doctors out there that went to school for years and years to help people like me? Because what I used to do was I would do all the research for the medicine I wanted. And then I would go in there and I would act the part so I could walk out with the pills that I wanted. And that's what I did for a long time. And it didn't work out that well. So today I'm actually able to explain to doctors, that I don't want to get out of bed, right? Or that I don't want to brush my teeth, or that, you know, I don't want to go to work. And these are things today that I'm so thankful that I know are not forever. Right. And, I'm so thankful that I, can have faith in a higher power and also the medical profession to help me in my life today. You know, it's interesting. My partner, David, and I, have been reunited now for, you know, we've only been living back together. We just celebrated our 13th anniversary. Which is kind of interesting considering we were not together for about 5 years in the middle of that. So it brings me to something that I just wanted to touch briefly on because it's really important in my view. And that is that when I've been clean about 6 years, my husband hasn't used meth or drank alcohol, for, you know, 4.5 years. So there was about an 18-month period where he was kind of doing his own thing and I had started this new life here, and he was still in Harris County. And one of the women that he used to run around with, whenever I got clean or whenever he got clean, he called me one day and he said, "Hey, you know, there's this chick that, you know, I used to live in a hotel room with, right? We all know those chicks." and she wants to get clean. And I was like, "Fuck you and hell no." Like, that's the answer to that. You know what I mean? Like trigger, stranger danger. and I have to tell you, that's the type of stuff. So I called my sponsor and I said, "Look, you know, my, uh, my husband wants to bring a hooker to Austin and introduce her to this life, into my world. I remember my world. That's what I called it. Wants to introduce this woman into my world. And I'll tell you, Princess said, who in the fuck are you to say that anyone doesn't deserve this life of recovery, you know? And at the time she was living in a tent with her 5-year-old son, you know? And I literally was about to say no to David. No, you cannot bring her here. And I want to tell you that that's the beautiful thing with good sponsorship, is that she cut me down really quick. She got me back into the solution really quick. And I was able to help get her here. And also, you know, through the help of other alumni, get her into an Oxford house. And she became one of my best friends. And so I thought I knew, right, at that time, I thought I knew that I didn't want to go through that pain anymore, and I didn't want to be treated like that, and I didn't want to be discounted, and I didn't want to, all these things, me, right? Like Chris says, me. And what I'm trying to tell you is, once I took that yoke of all that preconceived notion shit off my shoulders and actually welcomed a sister into recovery and helped her get plugged in all the places that I had gotten plugged into, and watched her grow and watched her become, you know, very involved in Oxford and very involved in recovery in Austin. And it's her kids that I have today, you know, 'cause she passed on March 31st. And so now I get the pleasure to raise her 2 children. One of those children was one of the ones living in the tent with her, you know, in Camp Wood, Texas in 2017 and 2018. And she really made a lasting impression. And her name's Bree Schultz. And I love and miss her very much. But I have to tell you that had I like put my foot down and had that like righteous indignation that I thought that I, you know, that I could, I felt like he owed me. And what I'm trying to tell you is, my sponsor said, shut the fuck up and sit the fuck down and let your higher power work, right? You can't walk through life in fear. You can't walk through life being afraid of things. And what a beautiful thing, right? What a beautiful thing. Like, I had no idea, because I already had it all worked out, right? I thought I already had it worked out in my head, and I didn't. And she was an absolutely beautiful person. Very, very, we traveled with her. We had every holiday with her and her children. Our kids are very close. Well, obviously now they're like brothers and sisters, so that's cool. And again, these are the children that I was talking about earlier that I did not have to give birth to. Thank you, Jesus. And so that is what recovery has done for me, you know? And I have to tell you that it has made me a better person. You know, it has made me a better person. It has made me understand that I am not in charge of anything except for putting one foot in front of the other. And for that, I'm very grateful, because when I tried to play the director and all that stuff, it didn't work out for me. You know, the movie was shitty, and I knew the ending. And I'm so thankful that today, and this is something I forget a lot, you know, and I'm so thankful I have a good sponsor, because she will call me on it immediately. And she will say, get out of the pity party. You know, what are you grateful for? I mean, if I could go back to 6 years ago me, you know, and tell me what things were going to be like in 6 years, I think one of the things that I would definitely like to know is that things get easier. You know, they really do. Things get easier. And I saw someone speak a couple Fridays ago at my home group. And one of the things that he said that I thought was really interesting was he said, I spent the first 6 years of my recovery acting like alcohol was the problem. He's like, and, you know, and during that time I had 2 failed marriages, 2 children. He's like, all in the rooms, you know, all in recovery, because I was working the program on my alcoholism. And he's like, and it took getting a new sponsor, you know, it took finding a new sponsor who basically said, look, the problem is not alcohol. The problem is you. And so that's what I would love to know. What I have to learn today and what I'm constantly learning today is that I'm the problem. You know, alcohol is the solution. And if I can learn how to take some direction, read a book, you know, 86, 87, and 88, as stale as that may seem to me, you know, now, I will be real honest with you, when I get into fear or whenever I start, when I start having that shitty committee, that bad neighborhood inside my head, the bitch in my head, when she starts talking to me, when I start reading those 3 pages in the morning, it gets me out of all that. And so some of the things that may not on the day-to-day work for me anymore, because I've grown, I want you to know, it's not that I don't do anything recovery related. I do. I just read, I have different readings. You know, I go to meetings ever since April when we got the kids. I have probably been to an average of 6 meetings a week because it really, I'm not kidding you. And I know those of you who have small children know what I'm talking about. It is necessary, to put my noggin on correctly, you know, because it's hard. It's just hard. Like, it's just hard. Life is hard. And meetings help me, you know, they really do, but so do working with sponsees. I think I've got 1 or 2 on here and I'm so thankful that you joined. I do feel a little disjointed because I'm not kind of in my element. And also it's this Zoom thing, which I'm kind of over. But I will tell you, the North meetings on Tuesday have been such a godsend for me. My home group, Cherry Creek, also has been meeting in person for a really long time. And I'm so thankful for that. And for those of you that don't know, Cherry Creek is being absorbed into the 617 Foundation, which is the club right at St. Elmo and South First. And that's effective August 1st. So in other words, we are not going to be next to Cherry Creek Catfish anymore. If you have any questions about that, please ask me. But other than that, I just want to thank everybody for tuning in and for listening to me blab about recovery, because I have to tell you that it is the single most amazing exercise that I work on daily, because it makes me a better person and it allows me to have a life that, that I never even knew I could have, you know? And for that, I'm truly grateful. So, thank you very much for letting me, bend your ears this evening.
Thank you, Kyle. Thank you, Kyle.
Thank you, Kyle.
Of course. Absolutely.
That was so awesome.
Yes. I loved it.